Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds. Leaky Black Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button. If you're Brandon Davies, you have consent. Don't forget to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel while you're here. All right, let's get into it. College basketball Tuesday night. Kansas beat Kentucky 89-84 in the second game of the Champions Classic. Yes, we'll get to the first in just a bit. Deadleg, you watched it. Deadleg, you wrote about it. Give me your impressions from KU's win over UK.
Well, I wrote about Kentucky, but I'll acknowledge Kansas off the top here. A very entertaining game. Really, you know, made up for Duke, Michigan State being just okay, and we'll get to that in just a couple minutes here. Kansas ruled the paint as expected. You know, Kentucky didn't have it didn't have any kind of size to really match up with KU. This was the sixth time in the past 8 meetings the Jayhawks have come out on top versus the Wildcats. And Dickinson, I mean, 27-21, amazing performance there. He was the first Big 12 player to go for at least 25-20 against a ranked foe since Blake Griffin did it back in 2008. When Blake Griffin did it, he did it against Davidson when Davidson was ranked. I actually, weirdly enough, remember that game. The first Kansas guy since to have a 25-20 game, by the way, since Thomas Robinson did it, 12 years ago. So a big time stuff. According to Kansas, there had not been a player that had gone for 25 or more points and 20 or more rebounds, which Dickinson did. That had not happened for a Kansas player since at least 1996-97, which is when a lot of these stat references, Stats Inc. goes back to the 96-97 season. So huge stuff. And yet, Kevin McCullough had the third technical triple-double in Kansas history, joining Jeff Withey and Cole Aldrich. I'm pretty sure Wilt had a triple-double or two, but blocks weren't an official assist or official stat back then. But regardless, McCullough was like the third most notable player. I mean, you know, Dewan Harris had a career high 23. So good on KU to get the win, to come back, close on an 11-1 run in a game that had 8 ties, 10 lead changes. But I did write about Kentucky because even in a loss, and I know Kentucky fans won't, you know, take a loss. And I led the column by saying, you know, Kentucky fans are not going to just accept a loss with a smile on their face. I get that. But it's undeniable. Like, Kentucky looked fun as hell. It shot 38 three-pointers, which broke the record by 5 of the most triple attempts in one game under Calipari. Only made 12 of them. By the way, Antonio Reeves took 17 of those threes. or 18 of them? 17 or 18 of them. He only made 3 of them. But Rob Dillingham, I mean, he had a stretch in the first half, which was outrageous, where he hit 3 after 3 after 3. Reed Sheppard looked good. Those two were well composed. And the fact that you didn't have, like, Kentucky didn't have the size, didn't have Big Z, didn't have Big U, or didn't have Big A. You know, Aaron Bradshaw, the freshman 5-star, he's still hurt. Ugonna Onyeso is still hurt. And then Zvonimir Ivicevic is still not clear by the NCAA. So they didn't have the size down low, but it didn't matter in terms of Kentucky keeping it competitive, having a chance with less than a minute to go. Reeves had 24. I came away, you know, Adu Thiero had 16 and 13. There's a lot of here, like some inconsistencies. Yes. Kentucky, is it going to blow a game or two this season because of its youth? Yes. Do I think it's actually going to steal a couple of games because of how much pizzazz is here and some promise? I do. So I come away with this with some genuine optimism or at least relief that when we watch Kentucky this year, GP, it's not going to be, at least it shouldn't be, we're early, but it shouldn't be a slog. I saw when you watch the way that even Wagner didn't play well, you watch the way this team wants to get up and down. They're young. They don't know what they don't know. But there's enough there that I think this team is going to be quite a thrill ride this season.
It's like Cal was on a Kentucky message board, like scrolling through, and he's like, "Oh, some of you guys want Nate Oates to replace me? Watch this. Here's 38 threes for you." He was into it. I like, you know, that's modern. It wasn't perfect, but it's certainly more modern than it has been in recent years. And like you said, and I tweeted this last night as well, hey, no moral victories. This is a big blue nation, as they say. But when you are in a game with the number one team in the country in the final minute, in the final seconds of the final minute, and your two of your projected first round picks, Justin Edwards and DJ Wagner, combined to go 1 of 18 from the field. I mean, I think how about that? You don't have to feel good about it, but I bet you, if you're a Kentucky fan, you wake up this morning and you go, "All right, I saw some stuff that makes me think this might really be fun and really be successful." If it's possible for Kentucky to lose a game in the Champions Classic to another blue blood and feel good about itself or encouraged about itself, I think that's what happened last night.
Yeah, I think so. I think so as well. We'll see if it can continue. I just think it will. I mean, Dillingham, he can be a blur. And there were definitely times between Wagner and Dillingham where, you know, they probably gave away 5 or 6 possessions. Shepherd's poise is undeniable, at least at this point. Let me bring up a friend of the show, Sam Vecini. Sam, we'll try and get you in here before the end of it. Sam tweeted last night, where was this tweet? He said, "Hear me out. What if Reed Shepherd is just Kentucky's best player, straight up? Great shooter, unbelievable hands on defense, phenomenal basketball IQ. Love watching this dude." I agree. Love watching this dude. I don't know who Kentucky's best player is. Maybe it will be Reed Shepherd, who was the lowest ranked of the 5 incoming freshmen, I believe, the 5 notable incoming freshmen. But there is certainly, you know, an element of composure that gets added to Kentucky when he is on the floor. Of course, he's the son of Jeff Shepherd. Get ready to hear that every single game for the entirety of his career. But nonetheless, you know, local kid does good, brings real hope to Lexington, and had a pretty terrific night overall. If anything, Dillingham's foul trouble kept him off the floor. I thought that was a major thing. But Shepherd having 15 points, he went 4 or 5 from the field. You know, 3 of those were threes in addition to 4 steals. So Wagner's going to play better. Edwards will certainly play better. Like, it's eye-opening that Edwards just was a no-show. He just was. And we didn't expect that to be the case. But they've got enough guys who seem eager and competent enough. And even, like, Trey Mitchell, I thought he did about as well as you could do against Dickinson. Like, he didn't have a great game, but he had some nice moments in there as well. So for Kentucky being shorthanded, I mean, I thought they did well. Kentucky still hasn't had 10 or more turnovers in a game yet either, GP. Some good early signs. You don't want the loss, but you didn't get run out of the gym. I mean, you had the lead. Yes, you blew a lead. You're young, but some encouraging early signs. And we haven't talked about Kentucky in this kind of context many times over the past 5 or 6 seasons in the first week or two of the season. Yeah, some more losses are going to come. But again, this team looks fun, and it's going to be worth watching, I think, way more often than not.
Another thing Sam tweeted last night was about the NBA prospects, you know, that are going to be presumably eligible for the 2024 NBA draft, because we had some of them on display last night. And I couldn't agree more with what he said, which is, like, how many of these guys feel like actual lottery picks? Like, it feels like whoever you think should be the number one pick in the next draft would be like the number five pick in a normal draft. It doesn't feel like there's a traditional, like, number one. That guy might emerge, but it doesn't feel like he's here yet. I can't see him.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And listen, we'll see what develops with this college class overall. Another projected number one pick didn't get a win last night. We'll get into that later in the show out west. My last thought on this game was, and maybe it was just Kansas' size, and Kansas isn't overwhelmingly deep. Bill Self coaches his team to another tremendous one. What do you want? Dillingham, Shepherd, Wagner, to instead, like, it, it can play small, but sometimes like they look small as well. So how they hold up to the rigors of a, you know, 35, 37, 38 game schedule remains to be seen. But I guess credit to Cal finally. He's got, now you got to get the wins. You know, you can be fun, but they're not going to, you know, you can't go, you know, 3-10 against ranked competition this season. Not saying it will, but at least you had some gusto to you. And that was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. And I would add, like, I don't know where this thing is going, although I would be more optimistic about Kentucky today than I was, say, this time yesterday. Even after watching them lose, I would be more encouraged by what I saw. But I do think it's, if you are a Kentucky fan who feels like, man, things have just gotten stale, you know, there's a Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame coach last night with a national championship and a million Final Four appearances who quite clearly has decided we're going to play a different way. Like, we're going to change the way we've been doing things. And again, if you're looking for encouraging stuff from last night, there was a lot of it from players, but I think that was from the coaching staff. That was on the list of things as well. On Reed Shepherd, Pat Forty, of course, longtime columnist, longtime friend from the great state of Kentucky or Commonwealth of Kentucky, whatever the proper way is to do that. He said, as Reed Shepherd was getting one bucket after another, like, you know, there were people who said this guy wouldn't play at Kentucky. In fairness, like, I might have been one of those people. I just assume somebody ranked 79th in a high school class is not going to be able to play for John Calipari at Kentucky as a freshman. If only because, like, somebody go look it up. I bet it's either never happened or very rarely happened. Somebody ranked, let's draw a line, 75th or lower in the high school class who was a real meaningful rotation player as a true freshman at Kentucky. I bet that list is either non-existent or short under John Calipari. And so I think it's reasonable to assume Reed Shepherd might have had trouble getting on the court at Kentucky early. And, you know, he did only play 16 minutes. So it's not like he went out and played 30 or something like that. But in those 16 minutes, undeniably, if you were watching it, he looked the part. He looked like he belonged. And it wasn't just because he was making shots. He looked like he belonged. A great night for Kansas because, yeah, they're the number one team with a win over Kentucky and 3-0. And their, you know, All-American caliber transfer just had a historically great game on a big stage. Bad night for the Hunter Dickinson is overrated crowd because he didn't look like that at all. So great night for Kansas, but I think also a good night for Kentucky. I saw even Kansas Kentucky fans last night tweeting in my mentions or somebody's mentions like, hey, see you guys in April. So there was some respect there. I'm sure disdain as well, but some respect there after 40 minutes of basketball. Let's move on to the first game. That was Duke and Michigan State. We talked about it. Duke needed a victory. We thought more than Michigan State needed a victory, and they got it 74-65. We'll get into that next, but first a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Final score, Duke 74, Michigan State 65. So Duke is 2-1 and Michigan State is 1-2. Were you encouraged by Duke? Are you now discouraged by Michigan State? What's your main takeaways from the opening game of the championship?
I'd lean more encouraged by Duke, which now holds a 15-4 all-time edge over Sparty in this series. The most random of notes, by the way, go quiz your friends today, folks. Duke is 10-0 all-time on November 14th. Has never lost on November 14th. And it's placed legitimate opponents on that. So congrats to Duke on its luckiest day on the calendar there.
I know when I would never schedule them. John Shire picks up the phone and says, "You want to do a home and home? We'll start it on November 14th. No way, buddy. I'm not falling for that trick. Hell.
Coaches out there, beware. I don't believe the Arizona game next year is on November 14th.
Put it in your calendars. Put an alert on your calendars.
Do not schedule under any circumstances.
You know, some people will put in, you'll put it in your phone, like do not answer. No. You ever do that? I haven't either, but I think people do that. They go, don't answer this number, no matter what. That's what I would put on my calendar. Don't schedule a game with Duke on November 14th, no matter what. Just a reminder. We just all need reminders.
Just keep it in mind. That's all we're saying.
That's all I'm saying. Keep it in mind. I mean, ultimately, do what you want to do. I'm just saying.
Michigan State's 1-2 for the first time since the 16-17 season. The game wasn't that great, to be honest. But Filipowski played well. 15 points. He had, 3 assists, a block, and a steal. Mark Mitchell got 13. Caleb Foster is clearly the biggest takeaway from this game. He really came on in the second half and had his first emergence of the season. He had 18 points, the most of any Blue Devil on the floor. He went 7 of 8 for shooting, and four of those 7 made baskets were 3-pointers. So Caleb Foster had himself a nice little coming out party. We get this almost every year. At least one of the players on one of the 4 teams that's a freshman will come into the Champions Classic and really just go off and make an announcement of their arrival. And for Tuesday night, that player was Duke's Caleb Foster, who is one of many talented, highly regarded freshmen on this team.
But the least heralded, least regarded of the freshmen.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that is.
That was a theme from the Champions Classic. Yeah. These talented freshmen who aren't the most talented or even close, according to the recruiting rankings, in their class, both played really well for Kentucky.
But to juxtapose that, you're right. In terms of rankings, I mean, Foster had been getting some decent buzz out of Durham in the buildup to the start of the season. So the fact that he was just a non-factor in the first few games for Duke was notable because some thought that he might be more of an impact player. And then finally he showed up and wound up doing it. Tyson Walker had double figures again, but Duke's just the better team. And my last thought on this is, I think Michigan State will ultimately be okay. I do. I think I mentioned this on either the season Eve show or the Big Ten show. I talked myself more and more into Michigan State as the preseason kind of drew along there because, Tom Izzo had never returned 4 seniors who were starters. That had never happened on a Michigan State team, and he's got that this year. And when I looked at everything they brought back, plus like a good team last year, not a great team, but a good team, I thought, I don't think this is a top 5 team, and I don't think Michigan State is going to be a top 10 team. But so I talked myself into picking them number 11 overall. And, I try and resist some of that, frankly, like everyone else has got them here. So I try and resist that, but in my heart of hearts, I was like, Michigan State, and the margins aren't that big, but I wasn't sure whether or not it was going to be a top 15 level team. And I'm still skeptical of that. It's easy to say after the loss here, and I think it'll be okay. But sitting here on November 15th, seeing what it has, and the 3-point shooting was a little bit better, but still it's not quite there. I just wonder if Michigan State might wind up being, 4th or 5th in the Big Ten and not the universally picked 2nd best team in the Big Ten. So I do have some questions there. Is Walker going to be the guy that's capable of carrying the team? I don't know. So Izzo should write it, but they got a tough schedule as well. So I should have trusted my initial instinct. That being said, congrats Michigan State on your inevitable 7-1 run over the next 8 games now that I've said that.
On Caleb Foster, that big performance against Michigan State comes after he had 0 points against Arizona. He was 0 of 0 from the field in 13 minutes, didn't even take a shot. And this was a big focus of John Shire's post-game press conference. He said what that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said what that young man has done over the past few days is it should be a, every coach in America should share it with their freshmen. This guy, whether he was pissed, this is John talking, whether he's pissed at me or pissed at himself or just pissed at the game, like he was not happy with the way Friday night went for our team, for himself. And yet he just came into the gym. Nobody works harder. Nobody stays more focused. Nobody's more resilient. And he just keeps going on and on. And keep in mind, like Kyle Filipowski sitting right there. There's another player right there. There's three player, Duke players at the table. And John's just going on and on and on about Caleb. And he finally says, you look at that game on Friday night and then like, look at tonight. He won us the game. He won us the game. And like everybody just sort of, and then John notices like there's other players up here too. And he's like, oh, and these guys did too. And Filipowski's like, thanks, coach. It was like a little funny moment where, you know, they're just sitting there listening to John really rave about, one of the talented freshmen on Duke's roster. So that's last night was a good night for Duke. We talked about it on the Sunday night podcast. You know, it doesn't matter where this thing is going with Duke. If you start 1-2 after being ranked second in the preseason AP poll with two losses as favorites, you know, people will start to, you know, get their jokes off at the very least and maybe try to make serious points even worse. And so to just avoid that is a quality of life thing. And, you know, sort of what I wrote about is if Duke would have dropped to 1-2 after being preseason top five, people would have started asking questions about John Shire. They would have. It wouldn't have been, it might not have been reasonable or fair, but it would have happened. With Izzo, you just don't, I don't think. I mean, you can be frustrated if you're a Michigan State fan. And you know, if you are you could be skeptical that Michigan State is going to, you know, become what they were supposed to be, which is a national championship contender and the second best team in the Big Ten. But I think there's some statistical stuff that just, like, it's not going to last. Like, they're shooting 16% from three. That's not going to last. A.J. Hogard has missed 21 of his first 26 shots this season. He's 5 of 26 from the field in three games. Like, that's not going to last. So I wouldn't be too alarmed if I'm Michigan State for those reasons. Some of the stuff that has led to this less than ideal start is just stuff that's not going to last. And then there's the track record. You know, as I mentioned in the column, John Shire doesn't have a track record really as a head coach, but Tom Izzo does. And one pattern throughout his long and Hall of Fame career is that he has multiple times got off to rough starts and ended up in a great place. I just sort of scrolled through it last night. Started 2-2 in the 2002-2003 season, still made the Elite Eight. Started 0-3 against top 50 KenPom teams in the 2004-2005 season, still made the Final Four. Lost to Maryland early by 18 in the 2008-2009 season, still made the title game of the NCAA tournament. Started 0-2 in 2011-2012, still got a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. So is Michigan State really a top five team, top 10 team? I don't have them there anymore, obviously. But history tells us this team is going to be good, if only because without exception, regardless of the way Michigan State has ever started under Tom Izzo, they have at worst gotten good enough to be in the NCAA tournament and at best good enough to compete for the
If you game. Said it, I blanked on it. Do you still have Michigan State ranked this morning?
Dude, I'm just not going to punish you, drop you what it would have been more than 11 spots for losing a neutral court game to Duke by single digits. You know, if I'm calling Duke a top five team, I'm just not going to drop you.
I would have James Madison ranked ahead of Michigan State at this point. They haven't lost. They won on Michigan State's floor. Michigan State has lost twice. That's all.
It's too early to do that. It's too early to do stuff like that. I was going to say reasonable minds can disagree. I don't even know that I would say it's reasonable.
Jamie was ranked this week.
Like I won't protest if somebody else wants to have James Madison over Michigan State on any ballot or in any rankings. But I think it's too early to what I would consider to be an overreaction to one single 40-minute basketball game. I punish Michigan State, obviously, for losing to James Madison. But with teams, and this is something I've subscribed to for several years now, with teams that I think are supposed to be great, so based on where I have them ranked in the preseason, like top five, top 10, I'll give you leeway with one what loss early in the season. I just do an automatic 10-spot drop. You get a second questionable loss, well, now you got to go, unless you have the wins by then to offset it. But losing to Duke by single digits in Chicago is not a second questionable loss. It's a loss that was frankly expected. And so I did drop them, but not out.
Michigan State 17th at Torvik as of this morning. It's 33 at Michigan's at KenPom as of this morning. And over at Evan Maya, the Spartans sit at 34. So certainly a case that can be made that they should not be ranked. They will not be. Michigan State, its next game coming is at home against Butler, then home against Alcorn State. I won't say won't be. I will be surprised if a 3-2 Michigan State team will be ranked when the polls refresh next Monday. We'll wait and see on that. We've got other results to get to. And frankly, there are some ranked teams that are taking L's as is, and we'll get to that in just a minute.
But first, word from our partners.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Somebody's getting trigger happy now. Come on. I'll play this game. Give me another word from our partners. I want one more.
Oh, my God.
I want another word from our partners. Show me our partners.
Oh my goodness. That was amazing.
Let's make That's it rain. Amazing. Let's make it rain. Let's make this the biggest revenue producing podcast in CBS Sports history. Give me another word from our partners.
Oh man. Okay. Let's just take a little tour around. I got some news and notes. Nada, feel free to cut me off in the middle of this with a word from our partners. I will not be offended in the slightest if it happens. Okay, I was at the Garden.
That'll be the new thing. Every time we start to say something Nada doesn't approve of, he just goes straight to our partners. It's like cutting the mic. Gosh. Go to our partners. Man. Show me something about the Champions League, please.
All right, I was in the Garden Monday night, took the trip down, hoping to see a good game. Did not. Michigan St. John's, Patino's Garden debut. Listed attendance was more than 14,000. I don't know if it was that much, but it was well attended for sure. And plenty of hype. Michigan just made a laugher of it. They pulled away in the second half. It really, you know, down the stretch of the first half into the second half, it really wasn't in doubt. Namari Burnett started tremendously. It made his first 8 shots. Doug McDaniel was unquestionably the star. And, you know, he's a little bit of a water bug of a point guard, but man, oh man, does he have speed, and his emergence could change. And I wrote a kind of a takeaways column off the game. Talked to Phil Martelli afterward about the job he's done and the emergence of McDaniel. And he had told me that, you know, he had a big maturation process over the course of the offseason, both on the floor and off the floor. And it was clear to see. If he's going to be that kind of player, McDaniel, and he's listed at 5'11", that might be giving him an inch or two. But for him to show up, show out, he hit a big three late. The game was already in hand, but he gave he put St. John's to sleep in that one. 26 points, 7 assists, 6 boards. He was tremendous. Him and Burnett really made it happen. In fact, Olivier Kamwa was kind of he was just like, you know, a role player at best. And I actually think the key thing for Michigan moving forward is for Kamwa to play like, you know, he's expected to be the team's best player. He wasn't there, but a good win for Michigan, which has been, I'll tell you what, right now with where we sit and keeping with the podcast theme, a lot of people could have been wrong on Michigan State, and even more people wrong on Michigan. Michigan's 3-0, has scored 89, 92, and 99 points in his first 3 games against Asheville. That was a tournament team last year. That's got Drew Pember, who could start for any Power 5 team in the country. Youngstown State, who's, you know, it's fine. And then St. John's, you know, it was a road game. That goes down as a road game there. Michigan will have Long Beach State on Friday, and then they'll travel to Battle for Atlantis. They get Memphis next week. We'll get to that down the road. As for St. John's, and then GP, I want your thoughts. Patino was pretty well measured afterward. He did say the one kind of quote that he said in classic Patino fashion was, an earmuffs here for the little ones, I guess. He said, our offense shocked the shit out of me. And by him saying that, he was meaning, I knew we were going to have problems with our defense early. And I had mentioned that on the show previously a couple of times. But he expected them to be able to respond to Michigan's tempo and offensive flair in a way that it just flat out didn't. It was... and the game was 89-73. I mean, Michigan got up by 25, 26 at one point there. Joel Soriano was just okay. Danis Jenkins, Chris Ludlam, you know, just not a lot there. So we'll wait and see. It was certainly a damper on the hype around St. John's because it wasn't competitive. I certainly would have loved to have driven into the city to see a competitive game. What were your thoughts on, the Johnny's no show after, 7 months of anticipation leading up to that moment?
Well, I could be a little more forgiving about the no-show because, bad games happen. But there had been a series of, things coming out that suggested, maybe we got a little caught up in this Rick Pitino thing in year one. They didn't play well in the preseason. Even Rick had suggested, we got a ways to go. And then in their first big game under Rick, they got beat by a team that people aren't sure is going to make the NCAA tournament. Now, I agree with you that Michigan looks better than any of us assumed Michigan would be, at least so far. But still, that's not – when you get run off of your home floor by an unranked team, that starts to maybe make it look like the people who – would have bet St. John's is an NIT team more than an NCAA tournament team. They might be onto something.
Yeah, we'll wait and see.
I'm not trying to change my prediction 9 days into the season, but that was not I didn't see much from St. John's that was encouraging.
Yeah, I think Patino and his staff are now kind of bracing for some growing pains and some, it's going to be bumpy. It might be bumpy the whole season. They might, they put themselves together and build a resume, but we'll see. Wasn't a good first showing.
It wasn't just a transition here real quick. A good correct. Monday night for the Big East. Xavier lost to Purdue. No shame there. I assume everybody that plays at Mackey is going to lose there this season. But Villanova lost to Penn 76-72. And I just started going through the numbers. Let's keep the most basic one. Let's put it up first. Cal Neptune is now 19-18 as Villanova's head coach with losses to Temple, Portland, and Penn. You concerned?
You lose to Penn. In the context of this season, I think it's understandable to be concerned. Now, that's not funny, but the interesting thing about this is Martelli in the post-game press conference on Monday night. So he's sitting there and he got asked about winning over St. John's and doing it at the Garden and his big return to the Garden. And then I sent it out where he said, you're going to get pissed, but it's the second best arena in America. Of course, as you all know, the best building for basketball in this country is the Palestra. Of course, Bill Martelli, longtime coach at St. Joe's, a bona fide don in that basketball loving city, is going to stand up for the Palestra. And as all this was happening, Penn Villanova, and he didn't know it, Penn Villanova was unfolding at the Palestra. Lo and behold, I told him a couple minutes later after the press conference, hey, by the way, Penn just beat Villanova at the Palestra. And he goes, what'd I tell you? The best building in the country. And some more Palestra magic there, which, good on Penn. A shout out to Coach Steve Donahue, who I know is listening to this episode because he is one of the many dedicated listeners to the show. So good on the Quakers for getting a win that obviously means a ton for the program, but also, this is Big Five hoops and that still means a ton in that city. And so we're going to focus on Nova because it's the Big East program and it's going through an interesting time here with Neptune. But to get this kind of win and Jay lost a Big Five game, I think to Penn as well,
Yeah, he did just a couple years.
I thought I remembered that happening. So yeah, again, this is kind of speaks to the magic of that of college basketball in that city overall. But yeah, there's reason for some concern if you're Villanova. You know, I'm not saying it's a five alarm fire. Penn shot 59% in the second half. I didn't see any of the game because I was there obviously at the Garden. But Nova slumping, and now it welcomes in like slumping Maryland on Friday. That game now carries a ton of urgency for both teams. I will point out, I didn't realize this. I wonder if folks found you as well. Our good buddy Kermit Roosevelt III, podcast mini legend. He works at Penn apparently. So the podcast juju, the podcast karma was on Penn's side from the get-go. Kermit Roosevelt III works at Penn. If you're unfamiliar with the story, I can't even get into it. I won't. I refuse to, but I at least want to give him a mention as well.
I want to echo what you said. Happy for Steve Donahue. Love him. Great man, great coach. Happy for him, his players, for that program. I do not want to take anything away from that amazing night that they experienced. Like, there's no way to say things like, are you concerned about Villanova without taking away from Penn's accomplishment? So I don't want to do that. I realize the way it comes across, but that's a memory those guys will have forever. Like that, you know, maybe if you ain't in that city, you don't properly understand what that means. But for Penn to beat Villanova at the Palestra in a big, that's a big time night. I mean, they'll remember that forever. So I'm thrilled for them, but it is troubling. You know, period, new paragraph for Villanova. As I mentioned in the lead to the top 25 and one on Tuesday morning, this is not like Kenny Payne at Louisville situation. Like one situation is way dramatically worse than the other. One situation I can't imagine is going to get to year three. Cal Neptune, it is still totally reasonable to me for somebody to go, well, yeah, we're going to look up in a few years and say, hey, we got off to an uneven start, but he settled into the job. I'm not ruling that out, but he is 19 and 18. As Villanova's head coach, started 16th last season in the AP poll, missed the NCAA tournament, started 19th at KenPom last season, finished 51st. Yeah, injuries, all sorts of stuff, but that's disappointing. There's no getting around it. This season, you start 22nd in the AP poll, and you lose your third game of the season to Penn, which is ranked 172nd at KenPom. So with that in mind, I went and looked this up. I don't know if you saw the tweet, but this would be concerning to me if I were a Villanova fan, because this should not happen. Jay Wright's final 321 games as Villanova's coach, how many times do you think he lost to a sub-100 KenPom team in his final 321?
What's 321?
I cut it off, right?
Is it like this? The cutoff, like just the middle of a random season, or?
Yeah, because they lost to one, and I started right at it.
How many times did they lose? So 100 or worse?
So it's 321 games. The final 321 games of Jay Wright's coaching career at Villanova. How many times did he lose to a sub-100 KenPom team?
I'll say two.
The correct nice. Answer. That's a trivia time win for you. I'm gonna give it to you.
I almost said, all right. I thought
okay. So Jay Wright lost to sub-100 KenPom teams two times in his final 321 games as Villanova's coach. As noted, Cal Neptune has now coached 37 games as Villanova's coach. How many times do you think he's lost to sub-100 KenPom
teams? I'll say four. I'll say it's. It's five. More than I was like, I don't know if it's double. It's wow. Okay.
5-37, 2-321. One of those is different than the other.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're both different from each other.
But you get the
point.
It's not good. Jay was actually on hand too at this game, I believe. We'll see. It's not time. Listen, the hardcore fans, I understand. Like you take a loss like this and you're like, it's time to pull the ripcord. It's not time yet, but.
No, I want to be clear. I'm not suggesting that.
It's clearly.
I'm not. I'm just saying these numbers aren't pretty.
It's not easy to follow the walk and follow legend, but we'll see. I still like the roster a ton, actually.
Bill Self followed a legend. That seems to be working out.
Kansas might truly be the one exception to the rule, but yes, at least in college basketball. But we'll see. it's just not going as well as it is, say, at, you know, Duke, to pick another spot where someone followed a legend. But Maryland at home, and then you get Battle for Atlantis next week for Villanova. So we'll get to the Wildcats again in short order on the podcast. Elsewhere, the best game of Tuesday night was probably Kansas-Kentucky, but I don't know. Marquette-Illinois, man, that was an awesome one.
How about this? Best game, Kansas-Kentucky. Biggest win, Marquette at Illinois.
Probably true. That game had the on-campus environment. I got to get to that building at some point. I've never been to State Farm Arena. Shows up well. And it looked great, GP. I think I'm going to endorse, if you'll allow it, the conspiracy theory. Tyler Kolek was never injured. I don't think this was the case whatsoever. I think that Marquette clearly tried to dupe the entire country. Kolek played, 37 minutes? Had 23 points, 6 boards, 4 assists. He did not look injured whatsoever. Guided this team on the road against a good Illinois team with a great back and forth. Tyler Kolek never was injured, incapable of injury. You with me?
I would like to be. It would be fun to start assuming Tyler Kolek is a superhero. Wouldn't that be a wild story?
He was a game time decision. And then the next thing you know, it's like this, it just never happened. Super impressive. Congrats to Kolek. Yeah,
afterward, Brad Underwood said, did you see his ankle? He was talking to the reporters. He said, did you see his ankle? It was black and blue. I understand. And he played 37 minutes.
Okay, so what you're telling me is Brad Underwood is in on the conspiracy.
That's what I'm saying. If you took that as me trying to discredit your conspiracy, that's not what I was trying to do. I was trying to show you Underwood's in on it too. Underwood's
They're all in on it.
And then Shaka Smart also clearly in on it. And you know, Shaq, he's been trying to pull these types of things. Who would it be? You know, Shaq is always trying to get over on you. He's been doing this for decades. No, Shaka said, listen, I didn't think he was going to play. Our trainers told me he's not going to be able to play, but Tyler never said that. And so here he is.
That's right. He went up to, Shaka went up to the trainers before the game. They're like, we don't know if he's going to play. And his response was, No. He got out there. He dominated. Cam Jones at 15.
We got this new JFK podcast out there. I keep seeing people tweet about Soledad O'Brien and Rob Reiner. They're going to finally figure out who assassinated John F. Kennedy. Hey, forget that everybody's tried this for like 60 years. We're going to get it done in a podcast
give it
now.
A crack.
I already listened to episode 1. What are you talking about?
Behind Tyler Kolek's ankle injury.
That's what I'm saying. Season 2 of Who Killed JFK will actually be called Tyler Kolek Never Had an Ankle Problem.
What went down on Friday, November 10th?
It was Friday, November 10th. Tyler Kolek landed at Love Field a little after 11 a.m.
against the Ryder Bronx. There are two.
Brad Underwood standing behind the picket fence. Remember when you stepped on that homeless man?
There are two infamous dates in American history. November 22nd, 1963. And then almost 60 years later, November 10th, 2023. The ankle injury that never was. Yeah. Congrats.
Yeah.
To Marquette on a big win. Oso Iguodaro had 13-8. By the way, Terrence Shannon Jr. was great again, 21 points. Marcus Domask, he had a season-high 18 for Illinois. Luke Goody had a career-high 13. Marquette has won 5 in a row against ranked teams for the first time in program history, and it's doing this while it is ranked 4th in the country, its highest ranking since 77-78. That's good time stuff. Before we continue,
I mean, it sounds impressive, but they got a superhero
Before
playing point
we
guard.
Continue. Where do you have Marquette ranked as of this morning, and where do you have Illinois?
I have Marquette at 6, and Illinois. I just kept them right where they were, and where they were was 22. Not going to punish you for losing to a team the caliber of Marquette, particularly when they have a superhero at point guard and Cam Jones at shooting guard.
National title contender, folks. Get ready for it. All right, let's tour around quickly with a few other results here. We've had some power conference teams taking some home L's in bye game situations. USC lost 70-60 on Tuesday night. It was a late one out in LA.
And they were shorthanded.
There.
Okay.
No Boogie Ellis, who had an ankle, I think. And then Kobe Johnson didn't play for reasons that were not disclosed. That's two of the three best players. Isaiah Collier did play.
Hold on, let me stop for a second. What if part of this conspiracy? What if they took Tyler Kolek's ankle, put it on Boogie Ellis, gave Boogie Ellis's ankle to Tyler Kolek, and that more than anything else will forever explain November 14, 2023?
It deepens. You don't want to.
I got a direct message, Soledad O'Brien.
You aren't ready to take the trip.
I have to direct message Soledad O'Brien. We're going to get on this.
Justin Hone had 25 points a game high for the Anteaters. They were ahead the whole way. I had Irvine 76 in my top 101. If you followed in the preseason, you're not stunned that this is a good team. However, it is genuinely shocking that USC, even shorthanded, got beat decidedly and by double digits at home. Trojans making me look bad. If I'm going to boast on where I had Irvine, I had USC 10th overall heading into the season. That's a little concerning, but didn't have two of the three best players. That's obviously a factor. Have to believe if they were on the floor, they probably would have won. I mentioned earlier, Kevin McCullough had a triple-double. Trey Alexander almost had one. Creighton beat Iowa late. Alexander had 23 points, 11 boards, 9 assists. So good on him. Creighton was expected to win. It got the win. If you've been following along on YouTube in the chat, then yes, obviously we were going to get to this next point. It's time to give some big ups to the alma mater of Elvis Presley. UMass Lowell goes down to Atlanta and gets its second win ever. Trivia time!
Okay.
UMass Lowell has two wins over ACC opponents. The second one came on Tuesday night against Georgia Tech. Who was the first?
That's
correct, my friend.
Man, that's the easiest trivia time ever. And I swear to God, I didn't know it. I just knew it.
UMass Lowell has only been Division I since the year 2013. It won on Tuesday night, 74-71 over the Bees. And
I know UMass Lowell got like an $85,000 check to go beat Boston College one night.
Maybe at least, if not more. It beat BC December 6th. 2015 by 2 points on the road. So two all-time ACC wins for Pat Duquette's Mississippi River Hawks. Elvis Presley smiling down from above. It's the first time this program, again, it's only been around for a decade, has never started 3-0 in a season. It's done it here. I was thinking as this happened about the guy who emailed the show over the summer and allegedly connected with this woman who also listens to the show, and they bonded over the fact that UMass is Elvis's alma mater. Do you remember that? That mailbag episode. That guy, I forget his name. I'm sure he's listening. I hope this woman who allegedly exists, by the way, never got a follow-up email. Shouts to cbs@gmail.com. We would like confirmation that this encounter actually happened. We would not like to, you know, put forth fabrications on the show. Regardless, this gent did send the email. He was on my mind in addition to Elvis. I'm assuming, I haven't checked your top 25 and one this morning, GP, but I'm assuming this kind of win means if you still refuse to rank the Dukes of James Madison, then surely you got to have the Riverhawks somewhere in that top 25 and one.
Mississippi Riverhawks. If I were expanding the top 25 and one to top 25 and three, I would have it'd be 27 James Madison and 28 Mississippi Riverhawks. They're right there. I mean, they're right there. And there's so many connections. They beat Georgia Tech, coached by Damon Stoudemire. Damon Stoudemire, of course, coached in Memphis, both for the Tigers and the Grizzlies. He's very familiar with the history of Elvis. In fact, it's one of the reasons he scheduled this game. His time in Memphis.
I thought he was.
He wanted to then bring Elvis's alma mater to Atlanta.
He's also a huge Elvis fan. Yes.
Yes. Oh, God. Are you kidding me? Huge. Huge. It's just really, glad the King got to have a. This November 14th, 2023, man. A lot of stuff went on.
It's a big time day there. We would almost be talking about another power conference team losing at home, but Syracuse rallied from 24 down to avoid a third straight home loss to Colgate per Mike Waters. Does a great job covering that team. It's the biggest comeback win for Syracuse since 1998. And per the ACC, second biggest ever by an ACC team. Just last season, we talked about on the pod, FSU came back from losing by 25 to beat Miami. Elsewhere on Tuesday, Providence manhandled Wisconsin. 72-59, the game was not that close. It was over in the first 5 minutes. Kim English gets the first big win of his career. Wisconsin,
it ain't been a first good 9 days for them.
It has not. I mean, it opened up a can of whoop-ass on Arkansas State and dropped 105, and then since then lost 80-70 at home to Tennessee, and then it was not competitive against Providence whatsoever. It gets to kind of get good this Friday at home against Robert Morris, and then it's got Virginia on a neutral next week on Monday in the Fort Myers. We'll get to that on the Sunday show. Elsewhere, not a result, but a note elsewhere in the Ocean State. This was inevitable. Jared Grosso resigned at Bryant. He was put on mandatory leave about 7 weeks or so ago. He announced it on Twitter. This had been a done deal for a number of weeks. It was just a matter of when this was going to come out. So Jared Grosso, who did take Bryant to the NCAA tournament, but was being internally investigated by the school. Those details have still not emerged. He is now out. Phil Martelli Jr. Yes. Plenty of Martelli content on this episode here. Right now, Phil Martelli Jr. is technically interim head coach, and his father is on a temporary basis doing the same thing at Michigan. So kind of the circumstances are absolutely terrible, but it's kind of interesting that both Martellis are currently coaching in temporary instances. But Phil Martelli Jr. will have a chance, and I actually think that he will be promoted and be the head coach permanently for Bryant moving forward. And that's, I guess, the past couple of days. Real quick, heads up on the next two, GP. Wednesday here tonight. Pretty rough. You've got the Gavitt games continuing. Georgetown Rutgers for the sicko factor, I guess. And then Princeton Duquesne. We talked about Duquesne on the Sunday show. Those are the only ones barely worth watching. Princeton Duquesne actually, you know,
that's not those. Both those teams could be in the NCAA tournament.
That's genuinely like that's. Listen, I love the sport. I'm going to watch it. We're trying to give a heads up on our viewers and listeners on what you might. Wednesday's tough. I mean, Tuesday was good. Frankly, and I don't know why this has to happen, but like if you had just simply put Marquette Illinois tonight. You know, like you would have probably had people that covered the games in Chicago at Champions. They stay one more day. They'd make the drive down to Champaign. You get even a bonus coverage. Whatever.
I've never understood why more people don't think that way. Like, especially when we had ACC Big Ten Challenge every year. And we've talked about this before. I would have Duke and Carolina hosting every year on different nights. So like Duke host on Tuesday and North Carolina host on Wednesday. And then every year I would, and then in the opposite years, I would have Michigan and Michigan State hosting same year. So that's on different nights so that whatever national media you get, they're going to be in your buildings two straight nights. People don't schedule with that kind of stuff.
They should. Little bonus exposure. Marquette Illinois was a really, really good game and it got some run. We talked about it on the show, but it didn't lead the show. If it was on Wednesday, it would have been more prominently featured across multiple platforms with entities that cover the sport nationally. Thursday, Feast Week gets going, although just barely, Charleston Classic. So you got St. John's. Again, here's the four matchups. St. John's, North Texas. That's really intriguing because North Texas, Ross Hodge, first-year coach, but defensive mastermind. What do you got, Johnny's, in that one? Dayton, LSU, Houston, Towson, and then Utah, Wake Forest. We'll see how the bracket breaks. Houston will be expected to win that event. We'll see if it winds up happening. Also on Thursday, Missouri, which just got beat at home, now goes to Minnesota. Potentially a slippery one for Mizzou. We'll see. Dawson Garcia was one of the best players in the Big Ten in the first week of the season. We'll see if Minnesota, you know, it's in need of like a really morale-boosting win for that program under Ben Johnson. And I'll also note on the note where like Princeton Duquesne's like a good Wednesday game, but there's another top 100 Kenpom mid-major matchup on Thursday. Furman plays Liberty. Two other teams that could wind up being in the field 68 in 2024. So keep an eye on that. Kind of slow over the next 2 days, but then once we get to Friday and into the weekend, we're going to really pick up and we'll have plenty to talk about on Friday.
Oh, I can't wait. Buddy, I can't wait for Friday.
I can't wait for the next word from our partners.
Oh, man, can we
get one more? You can literally, you can interrupt us in the middle of this. Nada, are you there? One more word.
Let's get rich.
Guys, let's go.
Got it right now. Another word. Do it.
I love you both.
Just one more word. Oh, man.
No,
buddy,
no, I'm
think
good.
About the email we would get.
Go home now.
guys, you made a $70 million with all those words from your partners.
Oh, man.
Hey, maybe next time.
That's a good moment. Those are the best moments on the show.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle. Legend Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening and watching. ION College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe. Anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. So make sure you're doing that, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Till then.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi, new episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.